I'm Gina Kaufman. Today's Central Standard is essentially a book club for people who want to do some reading up on Kansas City history. We don't just want the most informative books, though informative is good. We want books that are fun to read, with some literary merit. It doesn't have to tell the whole story of Kansas City or even one of its most famous episodes. A single character or random event can be just as intriguing. Call 816-235-2888 to share your favorites. That number again is 816-235-2888. Let me introduce today's panelists. Monroe Dodd is a local historian who joins Central Standard regularly as a history correspondent. Hi, Monroe.
Good morning, Gina.
It's so great to have you here again.
Nice to be here.
And Eli Paul joins us as well. He's the manager of the Missouri Valley Special Collections at the Kansas City Public Library. Hey there, Eli.
Hi, Gina.
So, you guys, I want to start with a book that appears on both of your lists, which makes it required reading as far as I'm concerned. Kansas City and How It Grew by James Shortridge.
Oh, I love this book. If you had asked me 3 or 4 years ago to recommend a general history of Kansas City, I would probably have punted that question. But in 2012, Jim Shortridge, who is a professor emeritus of geography at KU, came up with a fabulous history of Kansas City.
What would you say makes it more fabulous than what had previously been available?
Well, I think it's very accessible in terms of reading about your city, your neighborhood. He really has such a great sense of place besides time. You know, historians handle time very well, but they may not do very well with place. As a geographer, he really tells you why Kansas City happened here and how it changed over the course of the many years. So it's just a fascinating, it's got a lot of detail, but it really has a structure that makes it understandable to the general reader.
Tell me more about that structure.
Well, he starts with 1822, which is, of course, when the first European-American settlement occurs in Kansas City with the Choteau family, moves it up to the Civil War. He has a post-Civil War era, which I'm very interested in because he really shows exactly how that great bridge over the Missouri, the Hannibal Bridge, which was opened up in 1869, what that meant for this small little sleepy river town. And he continues on with sort of big chunks of Kansas City history thereafter. And he does take up some of the issues of modern issues like the previous guest did.
So things like race.
Things like race, things like the urban white flight, things that really relate to the era that we may think of as Kansas City's golden age, the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, in that era, and how things happened after that.
Monroe, anything you want to add about that book? What do you like about James Shortridge's Kansas City and How It Grew?
Well, I second what Eli said, and for all the same reasons. It actually, after dabbling myself in Kansas City history for quite a few years, it answered several questions I had never been able to find the answer to or never taken the effort to find the answer to.
Such as?
Well, which way the Turkey Creek used to flow to get to the Missouri River. And people say, oh, it doesn't go to the Missouri River. It goes to the Kansas. Well, no. Long ago, it went to the Missouri River because a lot of things changed about our rivers. They were redirected by mankind. They were redirected by nature and flooding and other stuff. So he gave some excellent answers to some of those questions. I would second that recommendation, but I'd also, at the risk of sounding parochial, toss in a couple of books done by the Kansas City Star. One in 1950 for the city's centennial was called City of the Future by Henry Haskell Jr. and Richard Fowler, and it is thoroughly accessible, though not nearly as detailed as Shortridge's, and tells a story up through the middle of the 20th century very nicely, weaves it pretty lyrically. I think a book done by Rick Montgomery and Cheryl Casper of the Kansas City Star at the end of the last century, Kansas City, an American Story, also did not try to hit everything, but did try to give you a sense of the city you live in if you live in Kansas City and bought that book.
So wait, what's the name and author of that second book you just recommended again?
The authors are Rick Montgomery and Cheryl Casper, and the name is Kansas City, an American Story.
Eli, is that a book that you've read?
Oh, yes. I would add one sort of as a counterpart to the City of the Future book is, and we have to get to it quickly, and that is Tom's Town, which came out in 1948. And it's sort of the mirror image of Kansas City's centennial observation in the sense of it shows you all the great background relating to the Pendergast era.
It's a very interesting book that a lot of people mention having read and ask about having read. It was done by a star reporter named William Rettig in the late 40s, right in the middle of a time when a local guy was president of the United States, which I have to believe, I can't prove this, but I have to believe was some of the impetus in writing it. And it covers, it tells about the Kansas City from the, I don't know if it's the underside or whatever, but it's the nitty-gritty of politics and reality and rum-running and booze and all these and a million characters.
What is the nittiest, grittiest detail you remember from that book?
Oh, good heavens.
Tell all, Monroe.
Trying to remember some I can do in polite society, but I know there are numerous occasions where fistfights break out and then knives are drawn and then guns are drawn and mobs
form. In what kind of context?
I'm sorry?
In what kind of context? Like politics, business?
Yes, a political dispute. Here's a polling place, and people are orderly in an orderly fashion going through the polling place, and all of a sudden a group of guys armed with clubs and knives and big fist fellows come in, and they sort of decide that they're going to vote some folks in there. That's the side of politics that he talks about, because the centerpiece of his thing is Tom Pendergast. And the Pendergast political machine, which is, of course, what promoted Harry Truman in politics. And so here's the president. Here's the machine that promoted him. It took Pendergast from the status of being sort of a locally well-known story to a national story.
It's hard not to glorify that period and those kinds of stories because it sounds, frankly, so much more exciting than what we hear about today, except also, like, not good.
But, you know, so much in history, we talk about the cowboys and cities like Deadwood and other places, and we say, boy, isn't that awfully interesting. But had you lived there at the time, I think you'd have been frightened and
right. Maybe
worried about your safety and maybe thinking about moving.
The old curse, may you live in interesting times.
Exactly.
In the Missouri Valley Room, that is one of our most asked about topics is basically the crime and corruption era of Kansas City. And there's a whole long list of great books that have been done relating to that. My personal favorite is one done by UMKC, a professor of history, co-authored with another person. Larry Larson wrote a great book entitled Pendergast.
And with it an was, exclamation
with
point.
An exclamation point. And it's if you know Larry, he wrote it in a nice wry. His wry sense of humor comes out in it. And it's a really good, short, lively read about the Pendergast era. Which
now,
is,
you're a historian, so I need to qualify. How short is short?
Oh, short's a couple hundred pages.
I'm laughing because that might not be everyone's definition of short. So this short book is a couple hundred pages, but it's got a sense of humor. Go on.
It does have a sense of humor, but that does lead you into tales about the local mafia and also like Monroe referenced Truman. And of course, you can't talk about a great lively read without David McCullough's Truman book. I mean, that's one of those books where even though it's as big as a doorstop, so many people I know have read it from start to finish. And it's because he's just a great narrator.
Truman, the story of Truman is not undertold, shall we say. So in this long tome, what is it? Is there something that's in there that we haven't heard before in David McCullough's book?
I'm not sure if there's anything new. Robert Farrell also wrote a book. I think it's entitled Truman and Pendergast or Pendergast and Truman. And, you know, everyone has to wrestle with the question about their relationship. And the basic question is, can you be an honest man in a corrupt system? And I think depending on the author, you know, they give Harry, a bit more or a bit less credit in that area. And that's why it's important to, you know, pick up a book and read, but read a couple more in the same topic and you'll really get a sense of what the author's the point they're trying to make.
And Monroe, you've also recommended Pendergast by Lawrence Larson. So we're going to skip back to that a little bit. We were just talking about McCullough's Truman. But let's get back to Pendergast exclamation point by Larry Larson.
Let's just say the book is manageable. When you sit down with a book, you don't think, God, how many nights is this going to take me to read?
Hopefully.
What am I going to have to plow through? Instead, you find it organized well. Not cliffhanging, but the sort of thing that makes you want to think, well, I think I'd like to read the next chapter tonight. I'm not going to put it aside. I'm not falling asleep. He keeps the story rolling. So in terms of it is true that a lot of local histories can be thorough and they can be accurate, but they can be boring. And then others can be quite compelling, but they ain't true. Larson in that book, and he's not the only one, was able to combine understandability, clarity, and a story that keeps you rolling with thoroughness.
Sounds
and
like the right details.
Yes, I think so.
So we have a caller at 816-235-2888 who wanted to chime in, didn't stay on the line to talk to us, but wants me to communicate this point. He recommends I Speak for the Dead, which is about early KC history by the riverfront area. And he wants to know if either of you have read that book and want to share some thoughts or opinions about it. That's J.R. who called in about J.J. Maloney's I Speak for the Dead.
I worked in the same office as J.J. Maloney, although I didn't know him, the late J.J. Maloney. It is basically a story about the mob in the 1970s in what's called the River Key era, although the River Key was only a part of the various machinations of the mob and gettings back at guys and stuff like that, foes and proponents in the time. But yes, that's one of a welter of books about crimes, individual crimes. You can find, and please don't ask me to name all these, but you can find about Bob Berdella, the serial murderer of Midtown, and Deborah Green, the woman who tried to poison her husband, in fact did poison her husband and set fire that led to the deaths of her children. You can find an amazing amount of stuff about this crime, that crime, the other crime, because crime always sells. And those are compelling books.
What is it? It's interesting that we're so fascinated by crime. And Eli, you were just saying that the things people most recommend have to do with that mob era. I mean, it's, I guess, to be expected. But is there maybe a more uplifting tale in Kansas City's past that people are equally drawn to? Or no, there's just no contest?
Well, that's a tough question in terms of other topics, because usually the other topics people are interested in are their community, their neighborhood, and there's been just a wealth.
Their grandparents.
Yes, and there's just been a wealth of shorter books that local authors have written about certain neighborhoods. I'm thinking of like Ladeen Morton writing about Brookside or the Waldo area. We have a speaker later this month, Donna Boley, Patrick Alley, are going to talk about the Hyde Park area. We have a lot of people doing local history here who are really on a very narrow focus, but they're topics that they love, and they're able to find a tremendous amount of information on it. It's the people writing sort of the broad general histories that are a rarity right now. People aren't tackling those topics, it seems like.
That's interesting.
I think in terms of uplift, maybe the counterpoint to all the crime and mob and political machinery is the Parks and Boulevard effort of the late 1890s, which occurred in the midst of all of this, in some cases with the help of the machine, and sometimes in spite of the machine and in spite of rich folks and stuff. There was a guy named William H. Wilson who did a book called The City Beautiful Movement in Kansas City that talks about the long battle with rich and poor and middle class and Republicans and Democrats and swimming through that sea, fighting every step of the way about people like August Meyer and William Rockhill Nelson and some others who really strongly believed that life would be better, rightly or wrongly, if we had nice streets and big parks for people to be in. And they fought their way through and created what's an amazing municipal monument.
Monroe, I want you to talk a little bit about the book I Was Right on Time by Buck O'Neill. That's one that you've mentioned as something that you'd like to draw some attention to. And the story of Buck O'Neill is also one that has captivated people.
To back away just a bit, there are not I don't think, enough studies of race in Kansas City. Kevin Fox Gotham did that, of the black experience in Kansas City, the African-American experience. And this is one of them. And you talk about uplift. There is hardly ever a more uplifting guy to meet or hear talk than Buck O'Neill.
Who sadly passed away a few years ago.
Indeed. His life was not all spent in Kansas City. He didn't grow up in Kansas City. But he touches Kansas City because he was the manager of the Kansas City Monarchs. He touches that.
The Negro Leagues baseball team.
Yes, the Negro Leagues, which was founded here in the early 1920s. And then the team, the Monarchs, did very well in the Negro Leagues. And Buck O'Neill was a perfect marriage, I think, of a warm and interesting guy who was not embittered. In fact, I believe that's the title of his book. I was right on time. I wasn't too late. Some people might say, don't you feel bad for being too late for desegregation in the major leagues? No, I was right on time. And he did a lot of good, I think, over his life. And so the book is touching, too.
Tell us about the voice of Buck O'Neill, the author.
Well, he of course works with a couple of other guys. Buck O'Neill was definitely in the oral storytelling tradition. He could tell stories at dinners and banquets and things that would leave the room laughing or crying or whatever. And I think that translates into this book, but it comes through a couple of co-authors.
Eli, do you want to say anything about this book?
Well, not so much this book, but in terms of uplifting authors, I think one area to really focus on is the rich array of women authors that we've had throughout Kansas City's history, starting with Carrie Westlake Whitney, who was one of the first librarians at the Kansas City Public Library, who wrote a 3-volume history of Kansas City in 1908. So she
1908.
So she had the benefit of being able to talk to a lot of the people who had made early Kansas City history. Female authors such as Jane Flynn, who wrote about Kansas City's architectural history, along with Dory DeAngelo, and Sherry Shermer, who wrote a great book, A City Divided, which also addressed the race issue of Kansas City. There's been some very strong voices in that area over the decades.
Let's hear from Keith in Midtown. Hi, Keith.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Great. How about you?
Fine. The book that I would like to recommend is the one that I grew up here after my family moved to Kansas City from Poplar Bluff in the mid-60s, and it's called A Condensed History of the Kansas City Area, Its Mayors and Some VIPs, and it says that it was assembled by George Fuller Green, who was the city historian. And it has a short biography of every single mayor from the city's inception up until the mid-60s. And it talks about the airports, the school board members, the public welfare board, the park department, legal department, and counselors. And it also has short summaries of all the surrounding towns. And very interestingly, it also has these three pages that says, some noteworthy women, prominent Jews, and prominent Negroes of Kansas City.
Keith, that is fascinating. You mentioned the title of this book. Can you repeat it? Because it was kind of a mouthful there, and I want to make sure we've all got it.
Yes, A Condensed History of the Kansas City Area, Its Mayors and Some VIPs.
What is the definition of a VIP as far as you can understand it from reading this book?
City officials.
Monroe, is this a book that you've read?
Oh, yes, and it's a very useful book. I think the word assembled is probably accurate because it comes from a set of essays and pieces written by George Fuller Green over the years. He headed up the Native Sons of Kansas City when it used to be a city agency and had a place in City Hall. He assembled this. And it's useful for everything from his essays on mayors to the little maps that show the city boundaries over the last century.
That sounds like more of a source book than one that you would curl up in bed at night and read.
Exactly.
An important book, but maybe not all that lively reading.
Central Standard's off to a quick break. There will still be time to share recommended reading for local history lovers when we return. Call 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. We'll also hear some news about the Missouri Valley Special Collections. Don't go away. Let's dive back into this book conversation. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today on Central Standard, we're getting some great reading recommendations for anyone wanting to brush up on local history or just wanting to revisit some favorite KC stories. Call 816-235-2888 to join in. Our guests are Eli Paul and Monroe Dodd. And Eli, we promised our listeners some news about the Missouri Valley Special Collections. What are you working on over there?
Well, this year we're planning on reconfiguring the Missouri Valley Room, the reading room there on the fifth floor of the Central Library. We've learned over the years that genealogy books that we have there on the shelves available for browsing aren't being used that much. And let's face it, Ancestry.com is making so many of those sources, obsolete anymore. So what we're going to do is basically enlarge our browsing collection on all these different topics that we've discussed today: art and architecture, business and industry, the Civil War, crime and corruption, a dozen or more topics. Heck, we may even have a section just on books Monroe Dodd has written.
And we should mention that we're here talking about local history books that are great, and we've got an author of a few of them in the room, Monroe Dodd. We won't put him on the spot by asking him to extol the virtues of his own books, but Eli Paul, perhaps you would like to do that.
Well, Monroe, as an individual and the Kansas City Star as an institution, they've really had a great eye over the last couple decades of figuring out the topics that people are interested in and then going out and then putting out a lavish volume based on that. Walt Disney's Missouri, I think, is just a great a type of book that you just can tell from the title it's going to be interesting. And they've done that for so many. They're doing it recent books on Bruce Matthews' survey of stained glass windows, and books all on topics that really have filled a niche in the local history community.
And Monroe was also, we're going to just talk about him in front of him, he was also involved in those Kansas City Then and Now books.
They are so popular, and really, I see those on the table at the end of the day in the Missouri Valley Room, because people are just fascinated about what Kansas City looked like and how it changed, what is there today and what isn't there anymore. And those photographic history books are so valuable in terms of giving people a sense of how history's changed here in Kansas City.
Yeah, they're the photographs side by side on facing pages, where one's a historic image and the other shows it as it is now. And it's been updated, I believe, because there's like then, and then the old now and the new now.
Yes, and we're even taking that idea a little bit farther. We're thinking about out on the terrace outside of the Missouri Valley Room, where you can go outside on top of the library and look around and downtown, doing a sort of then and now panel displays outside, so people can see from 10th and Broadway what downtown Kansas City used to look like and what it looks like today.
I sometimes wonder, Gina, if people saw the Roman Forum all built up and fine and well-maintained and so forth, if it would be nearly as interesting as looking at it now in ruins. So often a ruin or a signal or a symbol of what used to be, or even a picture of what used to be, can be fascinating to folks. And in that line, I got to mention two books about architecture, one by George Ehrlich, a former UMKC professor, Ehrlich, called Kansas City, Missouri, and Architectural History. And he goes through the structures as they came up and as they went down. And another more recent by a former colleague of mine, Steve Paul, at the newspaper, called Elemental and Alphabetical Guide to Kansas City's Built Environment, which came from a series of articles he did called Kansas City A to Z.
What's the premise there?
The premise is everything from this pediment to this entire building, from this door to this stairway, the parts and things that make up our Kansas City architecture, and then the whole, the parts, then the sums of the parts, I guess.
So it's like the visual experience leads you into a story of how it got to be that way.
It's like architecture A to Z. L could be the Liberty Memorial.
And Eli mentioned earlier Jane Fifield Flynn, who with a woman named Dory D'Angelo, did a book called Kansas City Style, which was about nothing but long-gone buildings. It was a great source for the then and now things.
Let's talk to Jake in South Kansas City. Hi, Jake.
Yes, a pleasant good morning. And have you guys had a chance to discuss Daryl Leving's Ride a Pale Horse? It's the history of Sterling Price, General Sterling Price, when he entered the state from Arkansas and planned to win it for the South, you know, during the Civil War. And then it encompasses all the battles around here, too. And just an exceedingly interesting read and well written. And just curious as to whether anybody had talked about it. And then Dick McKenzie's old book, I can't think of the name of it. It's kind of history of the river, what went on around here with the Missouri River. And it's 20 years old or 25 years old.
So let's
get. That's all I have.
Okay, so let's start with.
Thank you and a pleasant good day.
Thanks, Jake. We've got Ride a Pale Horse. And Eli Paul, would you like to tell us anything about that book?
I would, and it takes us into an area that I feel strongly about, and that's historical fiction. It's actually Saddle the Pale Horse. And I feel like historical fiction, such as Daryl's, is really good about giving you a history lesson and it going down quite easily. There's a couple other books I'd like to mention in the same area. One is Daniel Woodrell's Woe to Live On, which is the basis for the movie Ride with the Devil. Fabulous book. But two books that are just, I reread them every few years, and that is Evan Cannell's Mr. Bridge and Mrs. Bridge. And if you want to know what Kansas City was like in the late 1930s, pre-war era, read those two novels because they give you such a great sense of what Kansas City was like for a certain stratum of the of society at that time.
So Woe to Live On, Mr. Bridge, Mrs. Bridge as historical fiction. But then the connection with the Civil War era, Eli Paul, talk to us about Bleeding Kansas, Bleeding Missouri.
We feel at the library a special connection to that book because we hosted the historical conference where several leading Civil War historians gathered together and gave papers, new cutting-edge, new research papers on the Civil War in Missouri and Kansas. And they collected those papers, Jonathan Earle at KU and Diana Moody Burke from UMKC, and published with the University Press of Kansas that book. And it's, as books in the scholarly realm go, it's only now being reviewed in academic journals and receiving very high reviews from their colleagues. But it's a very, very interesting book and really the latest word on the Civil War in this part of the area. But in terms of stimulating reads, you got to go back with the classic of Howard Manette and Action Before Westport, which is the great history of the Battle of Westport.
Let's get Laura and Raymore on this. Laura, welcome.
Thank you. I wanted to tell you, I ordered the Buck O'Neill book from the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, and they mailed it to me after I sent a check, and it was wonderful. I had read it. I checked it out from the library before, but this one I gave to my son for Christmas. And there's another book, Kansas City Jazz, From Ragtime to Bebop, A History, by Frank Driggs and Chuck Haddix, and it was really interesting.
So, and that one, speaking of that era where things are kind of nitty-gritty, Monroe.
Speaking of it, jazz is definitely a big portion of that. And it is one of the ways, Negro Leagues baseball and jazz are two of the major ways that the black community, the African-American community in Kansas City, has been written about. But I want to mention one other scholarly thing, and that's by another former colleague of mine named Charles Coulter, called Lift Up the Black Man's Burden. And it is, he went through Take Up the Black Man's Burden, Kansas City's African-American Communities, 1865 to 1939, in which he takes a very close look through census data and other stuff at what black life was like in that era.
And Eli, one last book to maybe get in here, The Kansas Indians, A History of the Wind People.
That's a book by William Unruh, and there are a lot of books about the Indian tribes of this era. That's one of them. He also wrote a book about the immigrant tribes, the ones that came east and were moved into Indian territory, or what was then Indian territory in Kansas. They're very interesting. I'd also recommend the University of Missouri Press series. They have several small books on the Osage, Iowa, Missouri tribes. They're meant for a general readership.
All right. And Monroe, if you want to just name one last title, just name the title. We'll have to call it there.
Deaths on Pleasant Street, The Ghastly Enigma of Colonel Swope and Dr. Hyde.
Whoa. Okay. We might have to do a whole show on that one. That's all the time we have for today's show. Our guests' recommendations will be online at kcur.org/Central Standard later today. Eli Paul of the Kansas City Public Library, thank you.
Thank you, Gina.
And Monroe Dodd, it's been a pleasure as always.
For me also.
Tomorrow, we'll be talking with a local playwright about his new show, which explores the dark side of self-help. We'll also get some insights into the self-help genre, its possibilities, and maybe its limitations. That's tomorrow at 10. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman. That's it for today. Stick around for Up to Date next.